Welcome to the Gospel According to a Sitcom Writer podcast. I'm James Carey and I'm a sitcom writer for the BBC and I'm a Christian. Hence my book and this podcast. Links in the show notes to my live show, Water into Wine, and my Substack. But let's crack on with another chapter of the book. The Great I Am. I don't know if I've seen the Ten Commandments all the way through, but I feel like I have. This box office blockbuster from 1956 conjures up images of important people looking serious. When Moses, Charlton Heston, encounters the burning bush, it's so serious and earnest, it's almost comic, which is not far from the original text. Read Exodus 3-4, and you will see a very odd scene in which God repeatedly sends Moses back to Egypt to rescue his people, and Moses isn't having any of it. Moses offers up excuse after excuse. In Exodus 4:1, he pleads that no one will take him seriously. Moses answered, "But behold, they will not believe me, nor listen to my voice, for they will say, Yahweh has not appeared to you." God tells Moses to throw his stick onto the ground, which then turns into a snake. What does Moses do? He runs away. I don't know if you can imagine a burning bush holding its head in its hands, but that's the picture we're looking at. Eventually, Moses offers a sick note, claiming some kind of speech impediment, to which Yahweh replies, "Who made man's mouth? Or who makes one mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Isn't it I, Yahweh? Now, therefore, go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak." Exodus 4:11-12. To which Moses replies, "O Lord, please send someone else." Wow, Moses, you just told God to jog on. As we read on in scripture, the vast majority of the heroes are deeply flawed with feet of clay, hearts of stone and brains of mush. We see that vividly in the New Testament with the 12 disciples who, if described on a film blurb, would be called a ragtag team of underdogs. But this divine encounter is better known for being the moment when God reveals his name. When Moses grovels, "When I come to the children of Israel and tell them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What should I tell them?" Exodus 3:13. Or in other words, "Who shall I say is calling?" Then God says, "I am whom I am." Then God says, "I am who I am. You shall tell the children of Israel this, I am has sent me to you." God then speaks at length and in detail about how he is going to turn the tables on the Egyptians and give the Israelites a land flowing with milk and honey, to which Moses says, "They won't believe me," Exodus 4:1. Apparently Moses has a clearer, more accurate vision of the future than the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. It should make you cringe. The point is this, I am is revealed as the name of Israel's one true God. So when Jesus makes a statement beginning I am, it's pretty clear that he's making some big claims. In the Moses story, Jesus isn't Moses. He's the burning bush. I am so much more. In John's Gospel, Jesus drops the I am bombshell in John 8:58, saying that he was before Abraham. But he also uses the I am phrase for things like I am the bread of life or I am the door, John 6:35-10:9. As usual, Jesus' opponents keep taking him literally. To be fair to his opponents, what are they to make of Jesus saying, "I am the good shepherd," John 10:11? He literally isn't a shepherd. He's from a family of carpenters in Nazareth. Or so they think. Jesus' birth in Bethlehem is only mentioned once in John's Gospel, 7:42, and there's heavy irony around it. In a sitcom script, it would read like this. Exterior temple court day, Jesus is standing on a plinth preaching. Philip and Nathaniel are also facing the crowd looking around nervously. Jesus, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, from within him will flow rivers of living water." Philip, leaning into Nathaniel. Nice Zechariah reference there. Did you get that? Although this might be more Jeremiah. Jesus, when you say living water... Philip looks round and Jesus has gone. The crowd is in uproar. Philip sees a temple priest holding a rock, looking disappointed. He has really big headgear and looks very intelligent. Bystander 1, "This is truly a prophet." Bystander 2, "This is the Christ." Temple priest, smug, "I really don't think so. This Jesus comes from Galilee?" Nathaniel. Ha, yeah. And when I first heard about him, I said... Philip gives Nathaniel a leave it gesture and points towards the rock the temple priest is holding. Nathaniel backs away. Temple priest. The scripture clearly says the Christ will be a direct descendant of King David and born in Bethlehem, so there's no way this man can be the Christ. Find me the son of a shepherd who has also not inherited the sins of Adam, presumably by some kind of miraculous divine birth, and I'll believe. Good day to you. The temple priest stomps off. Philip considers going after him, looks to camera as if to say, shall I tell him? And then shrugs and walks off with Nathaniel. John knows that we know where Jesus was really born because his gospel assumes we know the other gospels. The Good Shepherd. So when Jesus says, I am the Good Shepherd, what are people like the temple priest meant to think? Jesus is a carpenter. In fact, Jesus' record with animal herding is, at best, mixed. When Jesus drove a legion of demons out of a man, Mark 5, he allowed the spirits into a herd of pigs, who promptly ran into the sea and drowned. The locals begged him to take his pig herding skills elsewhere. If anyone came to me with that track record, I could be forgiven for not entrusting them with my flock of sheep. Jesus also says he is the vine and the gate, John 15:1, 10:9. He is those things, and he isn't, not literally. So let's cut these folks some slack, which is why I wrote this. Early manuscripts do not include the following. Jesus began to speak in parables, and he said to them, ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. Then Peter said, teacher, are you the door on which we are to knock? Before Jesus could answer, Nathanael said, is this about doing door-to-door evangelism again? Then Jesus said, I thought you said you were the gate. Jesus said, I am the gate. So we knock on the gate, said James. Can you knock on a gate, technically? You can rattle it, said Nathanael. Peter attempted to clarify. Knock on the door or rattle the gate and it will be open to you. Is it a narrow gate? Said James. Look, will you just shut up about gates, said Peter. Well, Matthew's always saying we're supposed to enter through the narrow gate, said James. Please stop talking, said Philip. Well, excuse me for not wanting to take the broad road to destruction, said James. Right, said Peter, again attempting to clarify. What we've learnt is that Jesus stands at the door and knocks. And if anyone hears his voice and opens the door, he will come in and eat with us and us with him. No, that's not right. I like it, though, said John. Might go in my sequel. You're planning a sequel to a book you've not even written yet, said Peter. Can we get back to this metaphor, said James. Jesus is telling us to stand at the door and knock. So we're both knocking on doors? That's a bit weird, said Peter. No, said Philip, there's only one door. We're both knocking on the same door, said Peter. Sorry, I've lost track. What side of the door am I on? Jesus is telling us to stand at the door and knock, said Philip. Or rattle the gate, said James. Shut up, said Peter. Jesus looked at them and loved them, and said, do you still not understand? And the disciples said, no. This is not the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We're no different from these disciples. Christians have always struggled with metaphors. In fact, one of the greatest, most read, and most significant works in the English language is meant to be a great allegory. But here's the irony. It literally isn't an allegory. It's about the broad road that leads to destruction and the importance of entering through the narrow gate. And in this fictional world, there really is a broad road and a narrow gate and a character called Christian, not Bernard, Steve or Trudy, Christian. In short, we need to talk about Bunyan. And we'll do that in the next chapter. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks very much for listening. Links in the show notes to various other things I do. Go over to my Substack and you'll find more of my writing and links to other projects I'm involved with. See you over there.